the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science.
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to journey number 117 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring The Death of Captain Future by Alan Steele, adapted by Brian Smith. I am your guide on this journey, Marshall Latham, coming to you from base camp in Turner, Oregon. So I have another story here for you by the Seeing Ear Theater. I've played a few of these over the last couple years. And, you know, Seeing Ear Theater is probably the newest audio fiction I've been able to rebroadcast here on the podcast. You know, a lot of what I play when I talk about older audio, it's the old-time radio stuff from the 40s and the 50s. I've been able to find stuff from the 60s, 70s, and even 80s. After the mid-1950s, a lot of that old-time radio goes away because it was replaced, in many cases, by television. I have been able to find some audio out there from the 60s and I think from the 70s and at least one that I know of from the 80s. But Seeing Ear Theater was actually audio fiction from the late 90s. It ran stories from 1997 through the year 2000. And so that's pretty up-to-date audio. I can't really call it old-time radio, but it is previously broadcasted audio. Seeing Ear Theater no longer exists. It started out as an audio extension of the original Sci-Fi Channel, and they ran these audio productions on an internet site, probably one of the first types of early podcasting. I'm sure it wasn't billed as such at the time, but it really was a precursor to podcasting. But it was done with professional actors, a professional studio, you know, picking classic science fiction from many great science fiction authors. So I've enjoyed several of these stories. And again, you know, I could just make a habit out of playing things from Seeing Ear Theater. But again, I'm trying to showcase lots of different things. But the author of today's story is Alan Steele. And Alan Steele was born in Nashville, Tennessee. And from there, I'm assuming he grew up and did little boy things and went to school with his friends and spent time with his family. You know, he eventually graduated from high school and attended college, or he achieved a bachelor's degree in communications and a master's degree in journalism, which led to jobs such as a staff writer for daily and weekly newspapers, a freelance writer for business and general interest magazines, and even a brief stint as a Washington correspondent. Steele became a full-time science fiction writer in 1988, following the production of his first short story, Live from the Mars Hotel, which was published in Asimov's. Since then, he's become a prolific author of novels, short stories, and essays, with his work appearing all over the world. In 2013, he received a Robert A. Heinlein Award, presented by the Robert A. Heinlein Society in recognition for his fiction, promoting the exploration of space. This particular story, The Death of Captain Future, received the 1996 Hugo Award for Best Novella. It also won the 1996 Science Fiction Weekly Reader Appreciation Award and received the 1998 Cian Award, I think that's how you pronounce that, for Best Foreign Short Story from Japan's National Science Fiction Convention. So that's pretty cool. This story was also nominated for a 1997 Nebula Award by the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America. So this story that you're hearing today has been enjoyed and received appreciation from many others. As I said earlier, this was adapted for Senior Year Theater by Brian Smith. So it's about time that you come with me and let's journey into the far reaches of space aboard a starship with a very interesting crew.
I do not authorize this attack. You will cease battle operations immediately.
I do not need your authorization to attack, Major. This is my ship.
How typical of the military to resort to brute force when discretion is required.
The Enterprise has demonstrated that it can track us. They must be destroyed.
Yes, they can track us. So if we attack them, they will return fire. And since we have no shields when we're cloaked, they will destroy us.
Questioning my ability to command.
You are not fit to command. Step down.
Has Captain Future been saved by the loyal crew of the Comet? Or is it too late? Have the fiery rays of the sun claimed the life of our hero?
He's unconscious, severely dehydrated, and needs immediate attention. Grug, bring me some ice. Otto, bring me the dehydration serum.
Right away.
Above him, below him, in all directions, was vastness, blackness, emptiness, ebon infinity sprinkled with far, cold stars. Thad was alone, utterly alone. No man was visible in all the supernal vastness of space, and no work of man, save a few tools of his daring trade. In the glittering little rocket bolted to the black iron behind him. It was terrible to think that the nearest human being might be tens of millions of miles away. On his first trips, the loneliness had been terrible, unendurable. Now he was becoming accustomed to it. At least he no longer feared that he was going mad.
An original presentation from America's premier audio theater group, Seeing Ear Theater.
Well, I've heard, that he didn't die on the Fool's Gold after all. That he escaped, Mr. Ferland.
You can call me Roar, kid. But let's get something straight. I was there. I saw it happen. I didn't hear about it. And if you want me to tell you the story, you gotta listen. No more interruptions, okay? Bartender. Another couple of rounds for me and the kid. I had to get to Ceres. I was taking a new job as executive officer aboard the Helium-3 tanker, Jove Commerce. The Jove Commerce made runs between Ceres and Jupiter's moon, Callisto. And this assignment was my chance at the big money. Far more than I'd earned from a lifetime of running tugboats around the moon. The only problem was, I had to get there first. No one was going to come from Ceres to pick me up. And I didn't have the money to afford passenger fare, so that meant I had to find a temp job aboard a freighter, outbound for the asteroid belt. Not an easy task. They all had regular crews. So I tracked down an old shipmate, Schumacher, who'd lately gone to work for the Spaces Union. He sat down in his ratty cubbyhole in Tycho City, cracked open a bottle of Luna whiskey, and discussed my options. There weren't very many.
Look, Roar, here's a scoop. I've checked around for a boat that'll take you on, and I've found what you're looking for. An Ares-class ore freighter, outbound for Ceres. In fact, she's already docked at Lagrange 4. She's ready to launch as soon as her captain finds a new second officer. Now, Here's a picture of her.
Yeah, okay. Standard rock hauler. 82 meters, gas core nuclear engine. Nothing I can't handle. What's her name?
The TBSA Comet. Her captain is Bo McKenna.
Yeah. So what's the catch?
Let me repeat that. The Comet, Bo McKinnon. You're telling me you've never heard of her?
Not a clue.
Terrific. The one guy who's never heard of Captain Future, it's gotta be you.
Captain who?
The flare is being sent off at the North Pole.
James Carthew reported. They waited then, in tense silence. An hour passed, and another. The uranium clock showed it was past midnight.
Why doesn't Captain Future come?
North Bonnell burst out, unable to keep silent longer.
That ship of his can get from the moon to Earth in a few hours. He should be here now.
James Carthew's gray head lifted.
He will be here. He's never yet failed to answer our call.
As a matter of fact, I'm here now, sir.
The deep, laughing voice came from the balcony outside the window. A big, red-headed young man had miraculously appeared there, as though by magic.
Kurt Newton, Captain Future.
Look, let's forget the whole thing, okay? Pretend I never mentioned it. I can get you a gig on another freighter, something heading out to Ceres in 6 or 7 weeks.
I don't have another 6 or 7 weeks. If I'm not on Ceres in 3 months, I'll lose the Jove Commerce job. What's wrong with this gig?
What's wrong is the nut who commands her. Bo McKinnon is the worst captain in the Transient Body Shipping Association. No one who shipped out with him has ever stayed aboard.
How come?
He's a nut, that's why. He thinks he's a space hero. He collects old science fiction magazines.
Science what?
Science fiction. What they used to call fantasy way back when. Anyway, he pretends to be a hero from one of those things. Captain Future, man of tomorrow. And he takes it seriously. Calls his ship's AI the brain.
The brain? Like what? He's got a brain floating in a jar?
I don't know. It's a fetish of some kind. Go figure.
Well, so he's weird. It doesn't mean I can't handle it, right?
Oh, and I hear his first officer's a Google. A female Google.
I don't have a problem with superiors. They're just a little different, is all.
A little? Their eyes are the size of baseballs.
So?
Whatever. I hear she has a thing for us, apes. But she's probably sleeping with McKinnon. You know, she's the only one that stayed aboard. And that's saying something. Others have jumped ship, faked illness, torn up their union cards. Anything to get off a comet.
That bad?
That bad.
Doesn't sound like I have a choice.
Not if you need to be on Ceres in 3 months.
Captain Future's voice rang like a silver trumpet summoning to battle.
To the comet! That call admits of no delay. The president never calls for nothing.
10 minutes later, a small ship shaped like an elongated teardrop rose from an underground hangar on the lunar surface. It was the Comet, super swift craft of the future men, known far and wide through the system as the swiftest ship in space!
Roar? Roar, wake up, please.
What the hell?
Roar! Mr. Ferland, please wake up.
Okay, I'm awake. What do you want, Brain?
The captain asked me to awaken you. He wants you on the bridge at once. He says that it's urgent.
Okay, all right. Let me check the data screen. don't see anything urgent. Oh, jeez, Brain, it's 0300. I'm going back to sleep.
Captain's orders, Mr. Ferland.
Ow, hey, turn off the damn lights.
If you don't report to the bridge in 10 minutes, you'll be docked 1 hour time lost, and a mark will be entered on your union card.
Oh, for the love of... Cut it out, Brain.
The captain thought it might help rouse you.
I'm roused. Jesus, I'm roused. Just let me get some coffee from the wardroom. I'll be there in 10 minutes. Where are my shoes? This place is a mess.
I'm incapable of cleaning. You have 3 minutes.
I can count. Ugh, the milk's sour.
Perhaps you'd like your coffee black, then.
Cute. There's a cockroach in the sink! Christ, Brain, you want to do something about this problem?
I'm sorry, Roar. I've tried to disinfect the vessel, but so far I've been unable to locate all the nests.
Never mind. I'll take care of it myself.
Ferland? Where are you?
I'm in the wardroom, Captain. Just getting some coffee. Ah, got him!
Mr. Ferland, you have 60 seconds to find your duty station, or I'll dock you pay for your last shift. Now hustle your lazy butt up here.
On my way, Captain. Okay, I'm here. Where's the fire?
Morning, Roar. Hey, is that coffee?
Something like it. Here, catch.
Oh, thanks.
Now I gotta stop for a second. Because until you've been there, you can't imagine how sexy it is to see a woman catch a squeeze ball of coffee with her right foot. But that woman has to be a superior. Specifically bioengineered for zero-G conditions. A narrow body, double-jointed arms and legs, elongated fingers, toes reshaped to act as a second pair of hands, enormous dark blue eyes, and skin covered in dozens of tattoos, including a monarch butterfly, its wings spread across her face. That was Jerry Lee Bowes, the first officer of the TBSA Comet.
I heard Bo yell at you.
Yeah, what else is new? Where the hell is he anyway?
Topside taking a sextant reading in the observation blister. He'll be down in a minute.
Should have known. Wakes you up in the middle of the goddamn night, then disappears when you want a straight answer.
Bo will tell you more when he comes down.
Oh, come on. What is it? What's going on?
I gotta get back to work. Excuse me.
Hey, Brain. Give me a hollow of our current position and trajectory, please.
Ship position and trajectory displayed on navigation table.
Roar, please. Just wait for Bo to explain it.
Thanks. Now, let's see. There's us near the third Kirkwood Gap, and there's Ceres, so we should be there in about 2 more days. And here's the trajectory line, so... Hey, wait a minute.
Roar, listen.
We've changed course.
Roar, calm down.
Calm down like hell. We've changed course. We're not heading to Ceres. We're not heading anywhere near Ceres.
Roar, please, there's a reason...
Brain, what's our destination?
The asteroid 2046R. The trajectory is displayed on the navigation table.
2046 bar? What the... Oh, nuts. I'm calling him. McKinnon! Get down here!
Roar, before you get mad...
Before I get mad, I'm already... I know he can hear me. Damn it! McKinnon, get down here, now!
Was a tall, well-built young man. His unruly shock of red hair towered 6'4" above the floor, and his wide, lithe shoulders threatened to burst the jacket of his gray synth silk zipper suit. He wore a flat, tungstite belt in which was holstered a queer-looking pistol, and on his left hand was a large, odd ring. This big young man's tanned, handsome face had lines of humor around the mouth, crinkles of laughter around the eyes. Yet behind the bantering humor in those gray eyes, there lurked something deep and purposeful. Some hidden, overpowering determination.
Now, Beau McKinnon, on the other hand, was squat and obese. He filled his chair like a half ton of lard. Black curly hair, turning gray at the temples and filthy with dandruff, receded from his forehead and fell around his shoulders, while an oily, unkempt beard dripped down the sides of his fat cheeks, themselves the color of mildewed wax. There were old food stains in the front of his worn-out sweatshirt, and dark marks in the crotch of his trousers, where he'd failed to properly shake himself after the last time he visited the head. And he smelled like a fart. He was nobody's role model. But that didn't stop him from thinking so, or from torturing us with his pathetic entrances. He descended from the ceiling in his wingback chair.
You can call me Captain Future.
You've changed course. We're supposed to arrive at Ceres in 2 days, and while I slept, you changed course.
Yes, Mr. Ferland, that I did. I changed the comet's trajectory while you were asleep. I've ordered the brain to alter our course so we intercept asteroid 2046 bar. We fired maneuvering thrusters at 0130 ship time, and in 2 hours we'll execute another course correction. That should put us within range of the asteroid in about...
8 hours, Captain.
Thank you, First Officer. At this time, the comet will be secured for emergency action. Any further questions, Mr. Ferland?
Any further... Just one. How do you expect me to make my rendezvous with the Jove Commerce if we detour to...
2046 bar.
Whatever.
We won't. In fact, I've already sent a message to Surrey Station stating that the comet will be delayed and that our new ETA is indefinite. With luck, we'll reach Ceres in about 48 hours. You should be able to keep your new position.
No, I won't. The Jove Commerce leaves Ceres Station in 42 hours. And that's at the latest if it's going to meet its launch window to Callisto. They'll go with or without me. And if they go without me, I'm stuck on Callisto.
That is not my problem.
Look, McKinnon.
Captain.
Captain McKinnon. Look, what's so important about this asteroid? I mean, if you've located a possible load, you can always stake a claim with the Association and come back for it later. What's the rush?
Mr. Ferland, I am not a prospector. If I were, I wouldn't be commanding the comet, would I?
Then what's so important?
Brain, display a holo of 2046 bar.
2046 bar. Type M asteroid, 3 kilometers in length, 700 meters in diameter, composed mainly of metallic ore and carbonaceous grundite rock.
Yeah, I can read the stats. But on the back end, isn't that a...
A General Aeronautics Class B mass driver, the TBSA Fool's Gold. It's a mobile mining rig. It attaches to a stony metal asteroid and sinks a shaft into its core. Then it begins to hollow it out, extracting rare metals from deep inside while shooting the till out its exhaust port as reaction mass. The mass driver propels the asteroid towards Earth, where it can be broken down for raw material.
And the crew makes a bundle of the refined ore. Nice work if you can get it.
It's due to arrive in lunar orbit in 4 months from now. 12-person crew, a captain, a first officer, executive officer, 3 engineers, 2 metallurgists, a physician.
Okay, and they're all going to get rich soon. What's that got to do with us?
We picked up an emergency transmission about 3 hours ago. Brain, play back the recording for our most selfish crew member here.
Mayday. Mayday. This is the mass driver, Fool's Gold. Mayday. been experiencing known problems. Fatalities. The crew is turning. They're killing. I'm insane. We'll request emergency assistance. We'll request emergency assistance.
That's all there is?
Afraid so. No other transmissions have been received, and no other ships in the sector have reported contact with them since... And that was 2 hours ago.
Are we the nearest vessel?
I checked. The only other ship within range is a prospector near Gaspara, and it's 34 hours from 2046 bar. Everything else is closer to Ceres than we are.
I guess you've already tried to contact them.
Yes, I have. Jerry, play back the...
Calling TBSA Fool's Gold. Please respond. This is Captain Future calling from the TBSA Comet. Registry Mexico Alpha Foxtrot 1657. I've received your transmission and I'm on my way to investigate your situation and offer assistance. The Future Men and I will keep you informed as we near your location. Captain Future, over and out.
The Future Men?
You have something to say, Mr. Ferland?
No, Captain.
Very good. My sextant reading confirms we're on course for 2046 bar. I'll be in my cabin if you need me.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Ferland, you'll need to arm the weapons pods. There may be trouble.
Yes, sir.
Very good, sir.
So carry on. Mr. Bowes, you have the bridge.
Trouble, my ass.
TBSA Fool's Gold, this is TBSA Comet. Mexico Alpha Foxtrot 1657, do you copy? Over. TBSA Fool's Gold, this is TBSA Comet, please respond. Over.
Still nothing?
No, it's been 4 hours.
I'm standing by for the course correction. On your mark.
Mark in 10 seconds. Brain, load program for new heading.
Program for new heading loaded. Program execute in 8 seconds. On your mark.
Arm main engines.
Arms armed. We're green to go.
Very good. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Mark. Okay, throttle down to 0%. Safe engines. Brain, please confirm new heading and destination.
New heading, X-ray 0.6, Yankee 5.29, Zulu 12.7. Destination, asteroid 2046 bar, ETA 6 hours 8 minutes. And counting.
Very good, thank you, Brain.
I can't believe we're doing this.
Pardon me, I didn't quite hear you.
I said I can't believe we're doing this.
Responding to a mayday?
Following this nut's orders.
I think you know the rules. You've been a spacer long enough, haven't you?
All my life, kiddo. Third generation. My mother was a beamjack. My father was a moondog. And I put on my first spacesuit before I was out of diapers, so don't go quoting the astronaut's general handbook to me.
Oh, yes, I see. And naturally, you know more about this sort of thing than someone who was bioengineered for zero-G.
Hey, look, I didn't mean...
Of course you didn't.
I didn't. And I don't have anything against...
Googles?
No, damn it. And I don't ever use that word either.
Why, thank you.
But I know I have a lot more about this business than Captain Future back there.
Ah, so now we get to the heart of the matter.
Look, you know what I mean. McKinnon is a rich kid playing at being a captain. I know the score. His rich daddy bought him a freighter and got him a commission to get him out of his hair. Now he's out here in the belt pretending to be this Captain Future character. And it's obvious he doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
Uh-huh.
For the love of Elvis, I've forgotten more about spacing than he's ever learned. And what does he have me do? Clean the head, mop down the wardroom, go EVA to check the cargo divots, set up cockroach traps for the love of...
Uh-huh.
He tells me to do one job, then interrupts me while I'm doing it so I can do another job. Then he balls me out for not finishing the first job. He wakes me up so I can fetch him some coffee. Then he goes to sack himself out.
Uh-huh.
He sleeps late. He dumps his food trays wherever he feels like it. Jeez. Does he ever take a bath?
Sometimes. When I remind him.
And he spends all his time reading those old magazines he's got stashed in his quarters. Captain Future and the Seven Space Stones. The Magician of Mars. The Triumph of Captain Future.
You should try reading them sometime. The brain has them all stored in memory. They're a bit odd, to be sure, but fascinating. It was another time.
Exactly. I bet the selfish son of a bitch has never thought of anyone else in his life.
He saved my life.
He... saved what?
He saved my life. Whatever else you might say about him, he's not selfish.
Anything you want to talk about?
Nothing that probably hasn't occurred to you already. I mean, you've probably wondered why a Google is serving as first officer aboard this ship, haven't you?
No.
Oh, please. We're not telepathic rumors to the contrary. It's just that I've heard the same thing over the last several years we've been together. You know how superiors mate, don't you?
What? Well, no.
Prearranged marriages.
Oh, right.
All very carefully planned by our clans in order to avoid inbreeding while expanding the gene pool as far as possible. It allows for some selection, of course. No one tells us exactly whom we should marry, just as long as it's outside our clan and it's not to... well, one of you.
One of us. Apes?
Primaries.
Why, thank you.
But it doesn't always work out that way. When I was 20, I fell in love with a boy at Descartes Station on the moon. A primary, as luck would have it. Or at least I thought I was in love. I think we were just good in bed. In the long run, it didn't matter because as soon as he discovered that he'd knocked me up, he got the Union to ship him off to Mars. They were only too glad to do so in order to avoid a...
messy situation. I see. Leaving you stuck with the child.
No. No child. I tried to keep it, but the miscarriage... Anyway, the less said about that, the better.
I'm sorry.
It didn't matter. By then, my family had disowned me, mainly because I had violated the partnership that had already been made for me with another clan. Both clans were scandalized, and as a result, neither one wanted me. So I was grounded on the moon. A small pension, just enough to pay the rent, but nothing to live for. I suppose they expected me to become a prostitute, which I did for a short time. Or perhaps commit ritual suicide and save everyone the sweat.
That's cold.
Perhaps. But it's the way of my people.
Even so.
I considered taking the long walk, pushing the void button at the end of the airlock. All your problems are gone. To the stars. But Bo found me first when I, well, propositioned him. He bought me a couple of drinks and listened to my story, and when I was done crying, he told me that he needed a new first officer. No one else would work for him, so he offered me the job. For as long as I cared to keep it.
And you've kept it.
And I've kept it. For the record, Mr. Furland, he has always treated me with the greatest of respect, despite what anyone else might have said.
So, the two of you...
No. The Google and the Fat Slob aren't screwing in the captain's quarters, if you must know.
I didn't mean it like that.
Of course not. But to tell you the truth, if he ever asked me to sleep with him, I'd do it without a second thought. I owe him that little.
Mr. Furlan, Captain Future has asked me to look into why the weapon pods are still not armed.
Tell him he's crazy.
Roar, just do it, please.
Mr. Furland, Captain Future has asked me to inform you that if the weapon pods are not armed in 60 seconds, you will be placed in the brig for the remainder of the voyage.
Oh, I'd like to see you do that, Brain.
It would be a distinct pleasure, Mr. Ferland.
Oh, Roar, come on.
Okay, okay. But Jesus, it's overkill. He's got 4 nuclear missiles on this ship. Packs Astra Royal Navy surplus weapons on a freighter. That's like arming a tugboat with heat seekers. What does he think he needs them for, anyway? Space pirates?
Actually, yes. He believes there are pirates in the belt.
There are pirates in the belt.
Freighter Orion to all stations and squadrons of the planet patrol,
shouted the young operator into his microphone.
Being pursued between Saturn and Jupiter by radium raiders.
There came a flash of brilliant light outside the windows of the speeding ship. A glare that lit up all space for a second.
They're within range.
The operator glanced swiftly through the porthole and glimpsed the scene to bring a chill to the stoutest heart. The 4 black cruisers, rapidly overtaking the fleeing freighter, were using their heavy atom guns. He glimpsed the shower of atom shells rushing toward them. Then another blinding blaze of light, a quivering shock through the ship, and the roar of an explosion.
We're hit, sir! Caught our stern, and have the 2 back blasted, sir!
The explosion had flung the teleaudio operator to the floor. He heard rending metal, the shriek of escaping air, the clanging of automatic bulkheads closing to prevent its escape. The Orion's rocket tube astern had been ripped into junk, and a backblast along the power pipes had exploded the cyclotrons.
We've been crippled and are about to be boarded. Our position as follows.
Weapon pods armed. We're ready to take out the dark side.
Look, I know Bo can be weird some of the time. Most of the time. But you have to realize that he's a romantic stuck in an age where most people don't even know what the word means anymore. He wants daring do, swashbuckling, great adventure. He wants to be a hero.
Bo McKinnon, space hero.
That isn't too much to ask for, is it? Perhaps so. This isn't an age of heroes. We move rocks back and forth across the system, put money in the bank, and congratulate ourselves for our ingenuity. 100 years ago, what we're doing now was the stuff of dreams, and the people who did it were larger than life. That's what he finds so attractive in those stories. But now... Well, who can blame Bo for wanting something that he can't have? He's stuck on a second-hand freighter with an ex-whore for a first officer and a second officer who openly despises him, and he's the butt of every joke from Earth to Iapetus. No wonder he drops everything to answer a mayday. This may be the only chance he ever gets.
Wow.
What?
Nothing.
What are you thinking about?
A lot of things. That one, a butterfly on your face. It looks like it's taken off when you get excited.
Oh. We've still got a few hours before we reach 2046 bar.
A few hours? Yes. I don't suppose you... I mean, do you want me to do anything?
No, I've got everything covered. I'm just going to, try to contact the Fool's Gold again. Get some sleep if you want.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe I should, grab a few wings.
Why don't you take Bo's seat? I'm sure it must be comfortable. He sleeps in it all the time.
So I've noticed.
Don't worry, I won't tell him.
Thanks.
Pleasant dreams.
Yes. Thanks.
TBSA, Fool's Gold. This is TBSA Comet, Mexico Alpha, Foxtrot 1657. Do you copy? Over. TBSA, Fool's Gold. This is TBSA Comet. Please respond. Over. Come in, Fool's Gold. This is TBSA Comet. Do you read me? Over.
The asteroid was enormous, kid. A potato-shaped rock the color of charcoal. And the mass driver attached to one end of it was the largest spacecraft I'd ever seen. Bigger than you can imagine. A massive spider-like machine that dwarfed our freighter like a yacht parked next to an ocean liner. We approached the Fool's Gold with great caution, being careful to avoid the stern, lest we get nailed by a stream of debris being constantly ejected by the railgun. That was the only sign of activity. Although light gleamed from the portholes of the rotating command sphere, we could detect no motion within the windows. And the radio...
TBSA Fool's Gold.
Well...
TBSA Comet. Mexico Alpha Foxtrot 1657. Do you copy? We're coming up on your port side. Do you read? Over. TBSA Fool's Gold. This is TBSA Comet. Please respond if you receive me. Over. Nothing. I've tried all channels.
Look yonder. Over there, the hangar bay. The doors are open, but the gig and service pods are still in their cradles. Even the lifeboats are still in place.
That's weird. Why would they depressurize the bay and open the doors if they didn't...
Knock it off, you two. It doesn't matter why they did it. Just keep your eyes peeled for pirates. They could be lurking somewhere nearby.
Hey, Brain, you got a fix on the mass driver's position and bearing?
Affirmative, Mr. Ferland.
Mr. Ferland, I didn't give orders for you to...
Well, what is it, Brain?
X-ray 176, Yankee 2429...
Skip the numbers, Brain. Just tell me if it's still on course for the Earth-Lunar rendezvous.
Negative, Mr. Ferland. The Fool's Gold has altered its trajectory and is now, according to my calculations, on a collision course with Mars.
What's that up there, Araj?
The younger Martian asked. The older man looked up. Up there, against the superbly blazing Milky Way, a tiny black spot was growing.
Looks like a meteor coming this way. But it must be a big one.
Look, Araj, it is a meteor, and there's a ship guiding it.
The two stared for a moment at the incredible spectacle. That expanding black spot was clearly a giant meteor, rushing now at tremendous speed toward Mars. And close beside the booming meteor rushed a dark spaceship, playing rays upon the great mass. The ship was propelling the meteor toward Mars!
That meteor's going to strike here!
The great meteor was rushing straight down toward them, looming larger and larger. The younger of the two Martians tried to scream in alarm as the monstrous mass darted down. He could utter no sound. Paralysis gripped him. Then, the giant meteor struck.
How long?
2046 bar will collide with Mars in 236 hours, 12 minutes, and 24 seconds.
That's, about 10 days from now.
9.83 standard Earth days from now, to be exact.
Brain, display hollow projection of point of impact. Oh, God. Just north of Valles Marineris.
Arcea Station. All the major settlements. There's 1.5 million people living around there. It'll come down on them like the biggest nuke ever.
It's sabotage. Somebody has sabotaged the mass driver so that it'll collide with Mars.
Shut up, Captain.
I know it. Asteroid pirates have taken over the mass driver, and they're planning to destroy the Mars colonies because they want to destroy the Mars colonies. We need to
While he's ramming, we should figure out how to get on board this thing.
Find a way to stop them.
Okay.
Before they can,
the hangar bay is out. We can't send our skiff in there while it's depressurized and the cradles are full.
Look, there. An auxiliary docking collar. On the spar leading to the command sphere.
I see it.
It'll be tight, but I think I can squeeze us in there.
That's cutting it close. If we can collapse the telemetry boom, though, we might be able to make it.
We can do that, no problem. Except it means losing contact with Ceres.
But if we don't hard dock, then someone's got to go EVA and try entering through a service airlock. And that'd probably be me. It's pretty iffy business since we're under acceleration.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other. Your call.
We'll hard dock. I'll go aboard.
Hey, what are you two doing? I haven't issued any orders.
Bo, have you been listening to what we've been saying? Have you heard a word either Roar or I have said?
Of course I've heard what...
Then you know this is the only recourse. If we don't hard dock with the gold, then we won't have a chance of shutting down the railgun or averting its course.
But the pirates are...
Look, get it through your head.
Roar. Bo, if there are pirates aboard the Fool's Gold, we'll find them. But Roar's right. First we send a squib to Ceres to let them know what's going on.
I know that.
Then we have to hard dock.
I know that. But I just... I didn't give the orders, and I'm the captain.
Begging your pardon, Captain. You're quite right. You haven't issued orders, and I apologize.
Very well. First Officer Bowes, prepare to dock with the Fool's Gold.
Aye, sir.
Mr. Ferland, ready the main airlock.
Yeah. Aye, sir.
Meanwhile, I'll send a message to Ceres and inform them of the situation before we lose contact. Good work, future men. You've done well.
Thank you, Captain.
Aye, sir. Thank you.
They'll surely see us approaching.
Otto warned as he waved his synthetic, rubbery-looking arms about.
The magician of Mars will be taking no chances, Captain Future.
We're going to use a stratagem to get onto that asteroid without him suspecting. Watch.
Kurt touched a big red knob on the instrument panel. In response, clouds of shining ions burst from the rocket tubes of the ship. They envelop the comet in a glowing, concealing cloud, from which a long, shining tail swept backward. They made the ship utterly resemble a small, real comet.
This camouflage will keep Quorn from suspecting we're near. Simon, you take the controls and drive the ship close to the invisible asteroid. As you pass the asteroid, Greg and Otto and I will drop on it in our spacesuits. We'll become invisible ourselves as soon as we're within the crystal's aura.
I'm preparing to open the airlock.
Affirmative. All indicators are go.
Proceed, Mr. Ferland. Watch out for pirates.
Okay. I'm in the access corridor outside the airlock.
See anyone?
No, so the main power's down. The emergency lights are on.
The air pressure's normal, though. It's safe for you to take off that helmet.
Right, I could, but then I have to carry it. Okay. I'm gonna head over to the carousel and cycle through into the living quarters. Through the carousel. Still no one. Oh, God.
Roar, what is it?
I just found a body.
Oh, is it dead?
Of course it's dead, you nitwit. He's naked, hanging upside down from a bungee cord inside a ceiling manhole. Looks like someone cut his throat.
Oh, no. Oh, my...
There's a lot of blood on the deck below him. Not on his shoulders. So it looks like he was killed after he was hung up.
Who would have done something like that?
I don't know.
Space pirates!
I'm going to push past them and check out the galley up ahead.
Roar, be careful.
You're telling me. I wish I had one of them super ray guns, Andy, eh, Captain Future? Just in case. I'm... Uh-oh.
What's going on? What did you find?
Another body. A woman. She's hanging from a bedsheet.
A suicide?
That's what it looks like. But then someone got to her. Or at least I hope it happened in that order. She's missing an arm. Cut off with a blowtorch. I'm gonna make my way through the galley here toward the bridge. It's a slaughterhouse in here. Six more bodies. Ballpoint pens. Screwdrivers. Syringes. Blowtorches. I don't believe this. It looks like they've all killed each other. I'm glad I kept my helmet on. It must reek like hell in here. There's blood spattered across all the bulkheads and floors.
How many is that?
That's 8 I've seen. 8 of the 12 crew members. Check that. I've got another 3 here.
What? What is it?
You don't want to know. They died hard. I'm approaching the bridge. Hang on. I think I hear something. Up ahead from the bridge. The hatch is locked. You hear that, Jerry? It sounds like pounding. I think there's someone alive in there. I'm gonna try to burn it open with my laser. I got it. The place is in shambles. I think I hear someone. Hey, is anyone there? Sounds like it's coming from the emergency airlock. I'm going over to... Jerry?
What?
There are 2 words here. Painted on the bulkhead. Looks like they've been written in blood. Says... Plague. But the rest of it's smeared. Looks like... Oh, God. The Titan Plague. Oh, God. Brain, report.
The Titan Plague was first contracted by members of the Herschel Explorer Expedition of 2069.
Brain, skip the details. What are the symptoms? How contagious is it?
The Titan Plague is an airborne virus that thrives in an oxygen-nitrogen environment. It is extremely contagious, though your EVA suit should protect you, Mr. Verland. The Titan Plague symptoms resemble those of the once common cold. Sniffling, coughing, sneezing, but then quickly turn into homicidal dementia. There is no cure. All cases result in death.
I'm gonna check that airlock now. I think someone's in there. Hello? Can you answer me? Hello? Are you in there? Oh, Lord. Oh, no.
Who is it?
It looks like their captain. It's okay. I'm here to help. Put the arm down. Can you understand me? Put it down. He's got somebody's severed arm. He's banging it on the outer hatch. He's not responding to me.
Keep back. You don't want him ripping your suit open.
Mr. Farwin!
McKinnon?
Roar, what's happening?
Mr. Farwin, where are you?
Over here. It's McKinnon. Where the hell did he come from?
What's going on here?
Oh, God, you idiot. You're not wearing a suit.
Wish I knew what's wrong. Things seemed quiet enough since we cleaned up that mess out at Neptune.
The little teardrop ship, the Comet, blasted on at top speed toward Earth and its summoning signal. Captain Future thought somberly of the many times he had answered that call. Each time, he and his future men had found themselves called on to battle deadly perils. Was it to be the same this time?
We can't always win. We've been lucky, but the law of averages eventually has to turn against us.
Did you shut the airlock?
What? Huh? Airlock? Airlock?
The Comet's airlock. Did you shut it behind you, or did you leave it open?
The airlock. I think so. I don't...
I think so. You moron, did you or didn't you?
Ferland! Oh, my God. What happened to these people? Who's that?
He's getting up.
Hey, don't point!
Get out of my way!
Roar, what's going on? Roar, do you copy?
No! This is my ship!
It's okay. I've got him trapped in the airlock.
Who? Who's in the airlock?
The poor bastard who used to be the commanding officer. He's got the plague.
We've got to help him.
There's nothing we can do for him now. We can't keep him sealed up in there. Only one thing we can do.
Hey, what are you doing? Get away from the airlock.
I'm sorry, sir. May God have mercy on us both.
Mr. Ferland, you just murdered that man.
Roar, Bo did shut the Comet's airlock on the way out. The ship hasn't been contaminated.
Good deal, kiddo. Keep it shut until I get back.
Did you hear me, Mr. Ferland? You just killed that man. I saw you do it.
Don't remind me. Now get out of my way. I'm going to see if I can change the ship's course. Okay, Jerry. I'm at the helm. I'm looking at the screens. Someone has reset the controls so the mass driver is pushing the asteroid straight toward Mars. Probably the captain when he went nuts.
Can you change them? Alter the trajectory?
I'm gonna try.
I'm placing you under arrest. Under my jurisdiction, as an agent of the Planet Police, I...
There's no such thing, McKinnon. No Planet Police, no asteroid pirates. Just a ship whose air ducts are crawling with a plague. You're dead.
I'm Captain Future.
Jerry, I can't access the central navigation system. I need a password. I'm completely locked out.
And what are you talking about, not letting anyone aboard the Comet until you've given the word? I'm the boss of this ship, not you. And I'm staying in charge until...
Okay. If I can't access the nav system, maybe I can scuttle the ship. I'm going to try shutting down the reactor's primary coolant loop. If I time it right, maybe we can make a getaway before it overloads. With luck, maybe the explosion will knock the asteroid off course and...
Joan! He's working for Ulk Warren, the magician of Mars.
I don't have time for that.
Traitor! You traitor!
Shut up! Damn it! The engineering subsystem won't let me in either.
You will not succeed in your evil plans!
Roar!
I'm thinking.
The Planet Police will not rest until they've apprehended you.
Roar, we're running out of time.
I think I got an idea.
Oh!
Roar, what are you doing?
Oh! Mr. Ferland,
return to the ship. First Officer Lee Bowes, once he's aboard, I want you to cast off and get the Comet as far away as possible.
No, Captain. You can't do this. It's suicide.
Captain, please.
I beg you, let me stay. Your place is on the Comet.
No, my place is here.
Captain Future, you can't.
If we get you back to Earth, maybe the doctors can still save you.
There's no hope for me now, First Officer. This is the only way we can save the Martian colonies.
But, Captain...
That is an order, future men. Now go. Leave me.
You're the bravest man I've ever known, Captain.
And that's basically it. In the end, McKinnon shut off his comlink so that he could meet his end with dignity and grace. Once the comet was safely out of range, he managed to instruct the mass driver's main computer to overload the engine reactors. Then, while he sat alone in the abandoned bridge, waiting for the final countdown, it was just enough time for him to transmit one last message of courage.
People of the solar system, this is Captain Future.
Anyway, the thermonuclear blast not only obliterated the Fool's Gold, but it also sufficiently altered the trajectory of 2046 Bar. The asteroid came within 5,000 kilometers of Mars. Its close passage was recorded by the observatory on Phobos, and the settlements in the central meridian reported the largest ever meteor shower in the history of the colonies. And that's how Beau McKinnon became known as Captain Future, one of the greatest heroes in the history of humankind. And that's how he died, too.
Yeah. I see.
You still want me to sign that autograph for you?
Well, yeah, okay. But Mr. Ferlin...
It's Roar, kid, remember? Here you go.
Roar, then... I have a question.
Jerry, over here.
Hey, excuse me, kid. You understand.
Sure. Thanks.
Hey, you.
Where have you been? I've been waiting.
Oh, did you miss me?
Perhaps.
Some of us were working late. I think we've seen the last of the freeloading cockroaches aboard the TBSA Comet.
Excellent. Did the brain help out?
Yeah, right. Actually, I had the brain reprogrammed. I know how much you loved him, so I changed his sex. And I gave her the voice of a 1930s musical film star.
You're kidding.
Nope. She sings all the readouts now. Of course I'm kidding.
So, he's still shipping out tomorrow, Captain?
Aye, First Officer.
You want to get out of here, eh?
I haven't even ordered a drink yet.
But there's still a tattoo or three I haven't seen.
There'll be time enough. So, what were you talking to that kid about when I came in?
Oh, just telling him the story of the death of Captain Future.
Oh.
It never gets old.
The story or the truth?
Oh, come on, they're close enough. Besides, you know it wouldn't do to tell the whole truth, nothing but, would it? Who's it gonna help to know that I co-cocked the captain? Or that we left him there, or that we shot 4 nuclear missiles up his...
Yeah, I know.
Hey, we've been over this. It was the only way, Jerry. McKinnon didn't have a chance. And you know I wasn't ever going to be able to break that password. Not in the time we had.
I know. I hate that it's a sham. I hate that people aren't going to remember the real Beau.
It's what he'd have wanted.
It doesn't make it right.
It's better that people have someone to believe in. Beau's gone.
Yeah.
And Captain Future is dead. Long live Captain Future.
And... we're back. Stealing that from good old Dave Thompson. Well, I think you probably recognized one of the voice actors in that production. That's right, Counselor Troy herself, Marina Sirtis, played Jerry. And Neil Dixon played the part of Roar Ferland. Unfortunately, I don't have the actor's name who played Bo McKinnon, a.k.a. Captain Future. But I thought he did a really good job as well. You know, this was a fun story. I haven't played a lot of space opera type stories, and this was essentially that. You had a small crew of a spaceship. And I like that we had the kind of point of view character that didn't know a lot about what he was getting himself into when he went on the comet. He didn't know about Captain Future and, you know, who this captain was. He was given a little bit of a warning, but really wasn't prepared for what he was going to get. And, you know, and I like the idea of somebody captaining a spaceship that really has no business doing so. You know, just a spoiled rich kid that was given what he wanted to get him out of his father's hair. And obviously didn't care for much that was going on in the real world, but was focused on the old-time radio shows, you know, stuff that I play here. Of course, it was made up for the story, but, you know, he wanted to be the hero and whatnot. Hey, Marshall. Hey, this is your future self coming to give you some extra information here. You're wrong, dude. Captain Future is not something that Alan Steele made up just for this show. It's a real thing. Captain Future was a science fiction pulp hero. There was a Captain Future magazine that ran from 1940 to 1951, and the character was created by Mort Weisinger, but was actually mainly written by Edmund Hamilton. Not only that, but in 1978, Toei Animation of Japan produced a Captain Future anime TV series. And that ran for 53 episodes and was based on the 13 original Hamilton stories. And so it's interesting to go back and to look at some of these things. I just wanted to correct you, point out to you that Captain Future is a real thing, and Alan Steele used it for his story, but he was basing that off of a real-life pulp fiction hero. So there you go. Just wanted to save you some face. Good luck with your podcast. I hope it goes well. Speaking from experience, I know there were some tough years there, but now you're rich and famous. At least I'd like you to think so, just to keep you going on the podcast. Think of me as your own Captain Future. All right, Future Marshall Latham out.
We now return you to your regularly scheduled podcast, already in progress.
And then you have Jerry, who's this superior, genetically engineered person who is able to do these great things. And even though she had the ability to go and do whatever she wanted, she was loyal to this person who had been nice to her. And, you know, that kind of rubs off on our protagonist. And I thought it was an interesting story. It does remind me a little bit of a story that I read for Starship Sofa way back when I was just first starting to narrate. I've thought about re-recording that story to play here because I don't want to put the narration that I did for Starship Sofa on this podcast because I'm not happy with the narration based on what I know now. I believe the name of that story was Salvage in Space by Jack Williamson. And that story had a guy that was pretty much a miner, you know, I guess a futuristic space version of a prospector. But anyway, he was on an asteroid and had pulled several asteroids together, basically had a rocket that he was keeping all these asteroids that he was going to tow or I guess blast all these asteroids back to the planet where he could sell them for the mineral rights or whatever. But, you know, this was something that was commonly done in this story. He was just one of these guys that were out there salvaging for minerals and asteroids that he could sell. You know, it's a hard working job, and he runs across this old derelict spaceship and, you know, kind of abandons his asteroids, thinking of what he could get for this spaceship, or salvaging it for parts, or whatever he could do. But there's a reason that it's derelict, and there's a reason that the crew isn't there anymore. So I can link to that in the show notes. You can go listen to that on Starship Sofa if you'd like. But yeah, where we have this asteroid mining aspect is kind of how it relates to this story here. But I really did like the integration with this real hard life science fiction. But, you know, it was the harsh reality of space, the harsh reality of life and death situations out there, contrasted with the old time radio Captain Future broadcasts that this captain would listen to and pretty much was living in that fantasy land. And I thought it was really endearing how much Jerry cared for the captain and looked out for him. You know, even though she knew better, even though she knew he was crazy and didn't make a lot of wise decisions, she was there to guide him and to help him. I guess you could say she was the counselor on that ship. So it was neat to hear her in a different role, even though it is science fiction, of course. It was kind of neat to hear her in this, rather than always thinking of her as a Star Trek character. I don't have a lot of time tonight. I could probably go off on a lot of Star Trek type things. But I'm going to leave you alone for the night, or whatever time of day you're listening to this. I'm not going to go into it too much, but I have given out some of the promotion codes for The Next by Tim Pratt. I have 7 left to give. So if you would like to receive a promotional code for a free audiobook by Tim Pratt, feel free to promote this podcast on Facebook or Twitter and tag me so that I can see it. And also, you can also promote the book itself, The Next by Tim Pratt, on Facebook or Twitter and tag me so that I can see that as well. So if I see that pop up, I will get in contact with you and get you a promotional code until I run out. And so I have 7 left, like I said. I am gearing up and preparing for the Edgar Allan Poe month. I've spoken with Ken Scholes, and he's finishing up that story. It will be based around the Raven, and is going to be set on a post-war colony world. And there's going to be lizard men from the center of the planet. And it will also have to deal with an AI-operated raven. So I hope you're looking forward to that. I know I am. I am working on getting more of the rewards out. That's been a lot of fun. The busy things going on behind the scenes here on the podcast, and getting ready for Edgar Allan Poe month. So I hope you're on board for that. And looking forward to that. I am. I think it'll be fun. I kind of missed doing it in January. That's kind of how I usually start the year for the last few years. But this is good too. I look forward to putting this together and having this great story by Ken Scholes. So anyway, good morning, good afternoon, and if I miss you, good night. Whatever that is from The Truman Show. Until next week. Journey on.
This is Christopher Monroe, author of Broken Escalator. Journey Into is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, which means that while you cannot change or sell it, you are encouraged to share it however and with whomever you like. Theme music for the podcast was provided by Man in Space. We hope you enjoyed the episode and wish you a safe and pleasant journey.